Hello and welcome to the Ski Racing Podcast with me, Ed Drake, a jam-packed trio alongside me this week. Ben Clark, Marcel Mathis and Mark Telling, the three of them casting their expert eye. I'm just here as window dressing. The races this weekend went very well over in Aspen, Colorado, and a huge day for the Brits on the slalom Sunday with Laurie Taylor, an absolutely epic second run charge. But we are going to start with the women's competition. It was over in Kvitfjell. They raced double Super G. They were supposed to be racing downhill, but they couldn't get any downhill training runs away. So we ended up picking up one of the races from Val di Fassa that got cancelled the weekend before. And they used that and ran double Super G, which actually worked out quite well because that Super G title was super, super tight in terms of going for the overall globe. So it was a great opportunity for another race to try and see if we can get that one done and dusted quite soon. The first race, the weather was pretty good for the first race. Not glorious sunshine, but nice weather, good ski racing weather. Lara Gooparaamy took the victory over Hoota. She was 12 hundredths of a second behind, then a further single hundredth behind that. Puchner was in third, and then a tie for fourth. Kira Wild back on the podium, which is great to see for her. It's been a while since we've seen her towards her best. And then the favourite of Marcel Mathis, Estella Detzka, back close to a podium. Nice to see her back after her injuries. Marcel, mate, let's kick off with you and that women's race, obviously with the vested interest from your father's perspective with being the technician for Ledecka. That was a pretty good day for her, right?
Pretty good day. I think she was flying down the mountain, actually, compared to what she's done all year, obviously coming back from an injury. So it was a tough one for her so far. But that was well deserved on that first day. Bit unfortunate that she, you know, got beaten by, I think, 1200s to get onto the podium. But I think everyone was happy. It was a good race, though. I quite enjoyed that.
Nice to see. We've talked about it, haven't we, a few times about how when the women go to what has been historically a men's venue and step up. We talked about it in last pod, saying how excited we were that they were going back to some more men's venues. But I think it just reiterates that same point. Really good hill, really challenging. The women absolutely took it in their stride, and it was a great showing. And good on Gooparaamy for getting the job done under pressure, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think she skied really well on that first day. If at the moment at least, if she's on top form, like there's no one who can beat her realistically. In Super G, she's just, you know, so nice. Like, she just has that technique that is absolutely perfect. And she's just better than the rest, I guess.
I think the confidence levels that she's at the moment are just going so, you know, it's able to build and build. And when it is one of those more challenging pieces, Ben, it makes such a big difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, it helps Godje being out in terms of that confidence you were talking about. So there's not someone who's expecting to turn up and win all of the speed events. Although, because it got turned to two Super Gs, that plays even more into her hands, because obviously that's normally where she is the most dominant. I need to take a leaf a bit more out of your book, Ed, and just start selecting countries rather than races for the speed events, because the Austrians I picked were all the wrong ones at the wrong time for this weekend. But no, it's like, again, we talked quite a bit about Hoota last week, Ed, in the preview, saying that she's had a pretty good season and she's the one most likely to be pushing Gooparaamy as well. So she's been skiing really well. And we did say Puchner's not been having the best of seasons by her recent standards. So it was good to see her back in as well. And like you said, just those few hundredths off, 1/100th off second, and you know only 1/1300ths off the lead. But it was a bit of a weird one. There was a pretty flat light as well, so it's not easy racing in that. There were a few good turns. I think I was texting Marcel at the weekend. The turns going into the kind of little road. We had the kind of compression and swinging up into that little road was a really fun little section, and you could see how aggressive people were being, the type of lines they were taking to see how much speed they could carry through the next section was really good fun to watch. But yeah, overall, Gooparaamy just looks like she looks like she's pretty zoned in on both the Super G and the overall globes now.
I think the Fizz interview, whereas a couple of weeks ago she was talking about scheduling and everything else, Fizz posted something yesterday, or I don't know, maybe the day before, but She was just talking about enjoying her skiing, enjoying her turns, that she has good feeling at the moment. And rather than thinking too much about the results, I guess in the sort of twilight years of your career, so to speak, in the later years anyway, she was saying, I know there's not going to be that many more years and wins. And so I'm just enjoying my skiing. And after such a successful career and a resurgence this season, what I again, lovely situation to be in, to be going out there each time and going, you know what, I'll just enjoy today, see what happens. And it seems that mindset is paying off for her.
Well, she also said that, you know, she didn't really see herself doing that at 32. And so I think it just shows how much she is enjoying her ski racing. There's so many seasons we've been talked about in previous years gone by going, well, I'm not sure how much she really wants to be there. Like, you know, she doesn't give you anything from the interviews. Ben, I remember you and I talking about it years ago, wondering what was going to be next, how long she was going to be around for, because she doesn't look the same racer that she used to be. And she is absolutely the same racer. If not, you know, is she better than, is this the best ever Gut Bahrami? It's hard to say because she was so good in those years when she was battling Von, you know, Lindsey Von winning all the races that she did, to be battling with her back then. It's sort of quite a long way to try and figure out, I think, if she's doing better then or now. But she's certainly up there with those performances. And to do that and still have the hunger, still have the fight, I think it's epic.
Yeah, it's hard to kind of compare the stages of her career, like you said, with who she was racing against and when. But the last couple of years, she's definitely seemed like she's enjoying herself a lot more. Maybe aside from the hissy fit she threw at World Cup finals last year, when she did the whole kind of either refusing to race or I'm going to push out the start gate and then stop because I don't like the conditions. Like it seems like she's this year, she seems really chilled by comparison,
Yeah.
but also chilled, but rapid. Like she, her focus is on the racing. She seems to be able to cut away the excess baggage of like being weighed down by other commitments. Does them, like you said, tells you her actual opinions when she's doing like an interview or a press conference, and then goes out and smashes it on the hill, which is what you want. You don't want racers who have like cardboard cutouts and just give you like generic statements over and
Oh,
over
yeah.
again.
Just
So
media
she's
handbook
telling you what she
answers.
thinks. If she is knackered and she's worried about scheduling, she'll tell you, but not in a whingy way. Just now, I'm knackered. I've done a load of races, but that's one of the things. Now she's competing on three fronts: Super G, downhill, and GS. And yeah, it's had an absolutely blinding season. So you could say, why would you want to stop now? But if this is kind of if she wants to walk away and go out on top, then this is the way to do it and pick up the big globe and wander off into the sunset.
Highlighted as well, obviously, because there's been a few injuries. So she's obviously skiing brilliantly, but it's you know, the number of wins, perhaps you could speculate that there might not be as many. You know, with the likes of Shiffrin, Goggia, and a few others out of the picture. So it sort of exaggerates that position even more. So she's having, yeah, great sort of bit of limelight at the moment. The ones if we, I don't know if we're good to move on, Ed, but the things that impressed me this weekend as well was Makuga with a fifth and a seventh. I mean,
Yeah.
2 years ago she was I think she was world junior champion in Panorama. We were doing some training with them in the week before in Nikiska, and you know, to make that jump from, okay, lots of world junior champions go on to do incredible things, but to make that jump so quickly and in speed, normally you don't see it quite as fast a transition as that. So a fifth and a seventh is particularly impressive, I would say.
Yeah, I was commentating. I'm sure it was only last season I was commentating on her. She was starting right at the back, and you're like, you know, she and all of a sudden, yeah, top tens and looks very comfortable. Yes, again, we talked about the tricky hill, and to do that on something where, you know, the experience would certainly play a big part. I think that's very impressive. Yeah, Ben, well, she got 24 starts, you're saying?
Yeah, and like I agree with Mark. Like, bear in mind the other Americans we've talked about on that speed team. Previously, she's kind of been on the periphery of that. So to come in with those kind of results is really good. Kind of, I guess, stepping into that kind of void left a little bit by Breezy Johnson. And obviously, while Shiffrin's out injured, it is great that they're still people on that team that can step up. Like Isabella Wright's had some great results this season as well. But like Mark says, like Makuga this weekend, like that hill seemed to really suit her because she looked really comfortable, especially when we move on to it on the second day when it was a lot flatter. Like it wasn't great when she skied down. She looked like she was comfortable with the hill and happy to attack it, whereas some people were really backing off because they just weren't confident in what they were doing.
Marcel, we were talking about it whilst we were prepping for the men's race and talking about how nice it is to see not necessarily names, new names at the top, because it's especially on the women's side, we're seeing a lot of the same names on the podium. But, like Musa Ferrier from Bosnia Herzegovina, so cool to see her, what the results that she did in Crans-Montana, which we talked about how that was off the back of Europa Cups there and how she'd obviously got to know the hill really well because she trained, raced there and done well before, and then backed that up. But then she, on the first day, we'll talk about the second day in a minute, but the first day when she was ninth, she was only just over a second off the pace. Let's see her getting in there. You obviously we already talked about Makuga there. Then you got a young Italian, Run Gadlier, Karen Clément in 16th of the French team. There seems to be this little, well, not even little, it seems to be multiple people that we don't ever really see, and names that are relatively new and fresh popping up and starting to get to the sort of basis of quality performances.
I think it also has to do with obviously them having good performances, but Muzaffer, okay, that's not a fluke whatsoever. I mean, that was pretty impressive on both days. But I feel like there are a lot of injuries, it's also specifically somewhere in between 15 to 30. So it usually gets the people into the 30 who are maybe not as visible usually.
Yeah, and it would take a bit more time to get into those results, right?
Yeah, and it's nice for them because, you have a better bib, and we see that over and over again. Bib's everything in the end. So it's good for them to have that bib, and a lot of them are, making the most of it, and they will be, coming next year, they will potentially have, a lot of advantages doing that right now. And we've talked about it, at length, across the board really. But it's those are the opportunities you got to take, and those
Yeah.
guys are doing that, and that's very good for them.
Yeah, exactly. Throwing the hands up. Yes, we've got a lot of injuries, but you still got to ski well. A little bit like we talked about with Daniel Yule getting the luck of going first on that second run in Chamonix, but you still had to have a blinder. You still had to play, ski well with the opportunity that you've got. And I think plenty of athletes are doing that, especially on your younger, less experienced on the women's side on venues that are, less regular on the Women's World Cup tour. Anything to add about race one, gents? Okay, on to race two then. Was a really difficult day weather-wise, really foggy, really, really difficult, lots of changeable, really big delays as well. So it took, I don't know, it was about nearly 3 and a bit hours, I think, to run the whole race, which was a little bit mad. But eventually we did get a full result on the board. Federica Brignone with an absolute huge, huge performance in very, very difficult conditions. She was first by 0.61 of a second. Gut Bahrami was in second place. Esther Ledecká up onto the podium for the first time in, I'm sure Marcel will tell me soon, a little while. Great to see her back on a podium. Lots of injuries, lots of illness, and great to see her onto the podium. And then Kasia Wieckhoff-Lee nearly got a podium on home snow. And then Musa Ferrier, I've got to talk about her quickly. She ended up in 13th, but all the way to that last split, I think she was in line for basically a second place. And then just messed up just before the lift, which is that really, really sort of steep section just after what it's like a carousel turn. I think it's called Tommy Moe, that left footer sort of 180, nearly 180 degree turn. And then you come over that right and down that really steep section. An opportunity for her podium, and she, was going great guns. But a really, really difficult day, Ben, wasn't it, in terms of weather? Great to see that. I think that is when you see the athletes that are really, really hungry, and those that are just sort of a bit cautious about what they're up to.
Yeah, it was also quite a tough watch, because you're sitting there on a Sunday, being like, right, let's go, let's watch some ski racing, and then you'd watch two people and then wait for 40 minutes and then watch two more and then wait for another 20 minutes. And I was like, I really want to see Mo Winkle's last race at home. Obviously, she's got the World Cup finals, but to see her kind of effective send off. And I was just like, are they going to cancel this race? And the jury were doing the right thing. It was, there were periods where the fog moved in and you couldn't see in it and you couldn't ski in it. And obviously, from the TV angle, it's hard to tell what racers can and can't see. But certainly for speed events, I was just like, they're making the right decisions, but at the same time, it's kind of heartbreaking if she doesn't get this. Obviously, she's had the race the day before, but just if you've kind of built that up in your head as this is my goodbye, my fans are here, and those kind of things, I was really glad she got her race away. But yeah, like you said, it looked so tough, and you see who wants it, and Brignone, the reason she won by so much, like it was probably one of the like worst periods of fog when she went down. It was one of the periods where I think not long after her they put another pause in for half an hour, and they were like, yeah, that was probably a bit too dangerous, and she just went, don't care,
Yeah, she was really
I'm
after it,
just gonna
wasn't she?
smash it. And she just did one of those runs where we talked about Makuga having to have feel for the hill. Brignone just looked so comfortable. It was one of those days where she was didn't back off anything, but also didn't look wild. She looked completely composed the whole way down. A couple of other people, I think Hooter probably got kind of spooked herself a little bit. She had like a really fast top section and then had one turn where she had like a big wobble, and then the rest of the run was just completely backed off from there. And it's a real shame, but you know, it's ski racing. Like if they're running a race in those conditions, you've got to do it. And Brignone was just a class apart. And Gubrami, it was hard to tell whether she was thinking bigger picture or not. I don't know how much that comes into it for her racing. You and Marcel have been talking about it with Manny Feller in the men's side, whether she was thinking just put it in the finish, get a solid result and go from there. But she didn't look anywhere near as confident in her like line and decision making as she did on the Saturday. But yeah, really, really tough race, but Brignone's showing what she's made of again.
What do you think, Mark, in those conditions with the races when it's like that and it's that tough to see such a huge margin? I think really shows how hungry Brignone is.
Yeah, and it's also an experience thing in my mind because I actually saw it in one of the group chats today. I think it was Men's Europa Cup speed. They delayed from something like from 8:30 till 12:30 for fog, and they did run it in the end. And you know what it's like in those sort of on those days. You've got people in the cafe who are like, okay, just keep everything calm, and you've got people there that are switched off because they'll say, well, there's no chance this is going to run.
Yeah, or
And I
don't want
think,
it to be run.
yeah, exactly, all that. And I think Brignone is the type of skier, and you know, again, if you sort of see her interviews and stuff, she talks about a love of the sport, love of skiing, and it looks to me that she's the kind of athlete that just loves to ski in anything, and she's also got the experience to boot. So I think some of the less experienced skiers, you probably some of them will just be wild and will have taken advantage of a few others skiing cautiously. But mainly on those kind of days, you do get to see a bit more separation between those with experience and those with the right mindset. So I always quite enjoy those days because I think it's a different challenge to just Bluebird, Perfect Piste, who's the best technical skier. It's a bit more of a mental game. The only other comment I've got from the races were I'm interested to see what Germany do with Emma Eicke in the next couple of years because I think she scored points in all disciplines this season. She's 20, 21, I think, 20 or 21. And so I'm wondering whether, you know, I wouldn't say she scored brilliant points in anything, but she has been top 30 in everything. And I'm interested to see whether they continue trying to do all four disciplines or whether she's going to go more speed or tech. It was interesting seeing her, you know, 17th on the second day. I just wonder whether she committed more to speed, whether she'd be stronger in speed disciplines or stronger in tech, or whether they're going to keep going as they are. I find those things quite interesting personally.
What do you reckon, Marcel? What would you, because I think up to a couple of years ago, probably would have said it's time to focus, pick a lane, tech, speed, do something. Whereas, I don't know, we've been talking about it at length this year, haven't we, about people doing so many more disciplines. And obviously the prime example is the injured Schwarz, but people asking more and more disciplines. And again, I think when you look, when you're in an era of athletes that are really dominating, and if you have got designs on overall globes and all that sort of stuff, then you do have to d diversify and ski more disciplines. What do you reckon? What would you do?
I don't think I would let her do everything. I think it's she they just like I don't know what the word for that is in English, but you know, when you I think they just do too much with her. I don't think because Mark said, you know, she's solid everywhere, but she's not very good in one or two disciplines, which if you want to win an overall World Cup, you've got to be very, very good, firstly, in one or two disciplines, and then you can progressively, you know, do other stuff. It's great for her, you know, to get that experience and all those kind of things. I get it. But I don't know what they're doing in training. But she was very good in slalom a couple, you know, she's 21, but a couple of years back, she was like almost on the podium in slalom. And now I think she's pretty much miles away from that. And I feel like you can also, you know, you can also do too much while you want to get into, you know, maybe that all rounding bit, but you've got to make sure that you are good in one or at least two disciplines. Very, very good. Don't get me wrong, she's very good, but very, very good.
Well, almost you feel like you should sort of go for a lane, pick one and get really good and then diversify rather than trying to get really good at all at the same time.
Yeah, like what, you know, if you're not like a hugely super talented, like she's a super talented artist,
Like a
wrong.
Shiffrin talent or
Like
metal.
yeah, you know, like I don't want to offend anyone here, but I think she's not a Schifrin, with all the respect to her. And Schifrin is about the only person who can do that, who can just, you know, rock up, never done a downhill, I'm just gonna win it quickly. But with other people, I think it's better for them to, you know, solidify what they have in those disciplines and making sure they're world class, getting all their confidence rather than going on to four disciplines and having like, you know, some mid confident in on all of them. I think that's just not, I don't think that's the right approach.
You say
And
a bit more like we said with Schwartz than Marcel, where like obviously he was the tech specialist who has slowly grown into that kind of all rounder until this season. Obviously he got injured this season, but that he built that speed in the last two seasons. You're like, actually, he can actually compete here. Whereas obviously he would have done it as a junior, but you've seen the speed in World Cup the last
the
couple of
thing is,
years.
you know, if someone's good at something, you know, they will know that she's good at it. But I feel like just because they know she's could be good at it doesn't necessarily mean you've got to do that right now.
Yeah.
Rather focus on a bit less, give her a bit more time to grow up, you know, get stronger, get yourself into like a position mind-wise where you're like, okay, I can, you know, get on the podium on a more regular base rather than, you know, doing all the races, tingling around the world and just picking up like 15th.
Yeah, well, Marcel, you're talking about the ages and stuff. You sort of goes back to what we're saying about Gup Rami enjoying the here and now at 32 and racing for the love of it. Whereas it's the same for Brignone. She's 33, so maybe that's why we're seeing this sort of real love for it at the moment, because she knows that she's not going to be here forever, and is one of those where she wants to enjoy what's happening. But I think what you're talking about with Aika is it feels like, yeah, if you can go down a route and get really good, specify focus on a venue, a discipline, sorry, or two disciplines, and then try and open it up once you've really built yourself a bit of momentum.
You know, I think you got to differentiate. And Mark, you're obviously still a coach, so like, tell me if I'm wrong. But I feel like you can always train certain things, right? You can train Super G. You can maybe do a Super G race or like a downhill. You know, train. I think that's great. Doing all of that is great, but having like the whole 45 races,
Yeah, and
not even
that's
different
what I'm
now.
wondering when I look at her schedule where she's been. I was just having a flick through while you were speaking there, and before Crans-Montana was in there, Soldeo, and before that in Cortina, and before that at the Tech in Jasna, Flakkal Tech, Altermark Speed, Kranjska Gora Tech. It's a huge schedule. She's young. She's clearly talented, and I'm just those kind of questions are just interesting to me. But I do feel the general thinking around the last few years, or last, let's say, probably close to a decade, seems to have been, let's not try and be jack of all trades. Let's try and get good at one and then bolt the others on. And it very much seems that, Schwartz, for example, in his earlier years was kind of only ever touching speed skis for the Alpine combined, for example. And then it's like, oh, had a few fast downhill runs. Maybe I should, I'm doing well in tech. I've solidified that. Let's maybe bolt that on now. I think it just seems maybe they'll keep trying it for one more year with Aika, and there may be others in the similar boat. Maybe they'll try it for another year and see. While she's only just coming out of juniors now, because she's an 03 birth. And maybe that was their plan all along, that we'll keep doing everything until she's out of juniors, and then we'll see. Who knows? I'm interested to see if there is a change of tactics. There's more than one way to skin a cat, so to speak.
But see, this.
Are you trying to say coaches have a plan, Mark? Not just fly by the seat of their pants and just see what happens.
I think
happens
they've got
week
retrospective
in, week
planning.
This week we're training slalom. I mean, downhill. I mean, whatever you're good at.
But the thing is, like, if you look at, for example, Ellis Robinson, I think she's doing it the right way. You know, she's been very good at Giant Slalom. Obviously, then she had a couple of years that she was not as good. But now she's so good in Giant Slalom, always podiums, basically. And she's really, picking up in Super G. She's, getting there in downhill. I think that's probably more likely the way to do it. But I'm not a coach, so I guess I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and you don't know what you're talking about. But as we've seen,
not yet, Marcel. So we've put your application in for the women's tech team.
Maybe
Austria, so you'll get it in no time, mate.
I don't think they would like me very much there, to be honest. I'll be too hard of a coach, actually. I'll be like.
Strict
I'm not sure I can imagine you whip. I'm not sure was that an action of you whipping the athletes, or is that just
whipping them into shape?
Okay, good. All right, good context there. Thank you. Right, so anybody else got anything to add on the women's?
A great result from Lester Ileska. Just wanted to point it out quickly. You talk about gutsy performances. Her performance was actually very gutsy. Like, she had the worst of all conditions. And she just absolutely flew down the mountain, just pointing.
It's all the skis, Marcel. It's nothing to do with skiing.
Can you imagine if she would have had quick skis as well?
Oh,
you're lucky your dad doesn't listen to this. Otherwise,
your mum's definitely telling your dad. you're in so much trouble. just on the women's side, do you reckon that's it? That's season wrapped up. Keep Rami. Do you reckon she can get back in it now or not?
What, in terms of the overall?
Yeah.
Overall, she's done and gone, dusted. Right? Absolutely done and dusted.
She can't get close.
No,
I actually spoke to Good's service a technician. He's a friend of my dad's. I spoke to him on the phone on Sunday. And I think he sounded very confident. He didn't say they're going to win it, but he sounded very confident. So I don't think there is anything.
Is he spending his bonus already?
A cup of beer. I think they had a couple of beer those too.
Yeah, I can't see Schifrin being able to, especially as the rumors, obviously it's only ever rumors with Schifrin and her camp in terms of what schedule they're up to, is that she's only going to do the slalom in RA anyway. So I can't see that. And then why would she then slap on the speed skis in Saalbach? On what is that is a difficult, a really difficult hill. That is not an easy hill by any means. And yes, that could potentially play into hands, but it's not like Gut Brami's not on good form, where Gut Brami's going to have to finish outside the top 15, because obviously you only get points to 15 in the World Cup final. So I don't see Schifrin seeing the overall as a viable, or her team seeing it as a viable one to start risking Schifrin's recovery on when you got world champions.
You can
call
summer off, do it. Go for it. You can call summer off. Go for it.
Super G standings are wide open still. Well, it's wide open. There's only one race left to go. And Hooter is 69 points behind. Brignone is 74 points behind. So it's not over, but close to being over as well. On to the main event, the podcast predictions league table. Obviously, that is the most important crystal goblet that we're playing for here. Out in front with only, what have we got, 3 weekends to go? World Cup finals and one last round of normal racing. Tom Hiscott leads the way, 172 points. Ryan Ballantyne is in second with 166 points. So he is, 4, 6 points behind. Getting close. That's nearly close enough. Jesse Hansen, 165. Jamie Aldridge is a late charge for Jamie Aldridge, trying to make. I think he's only won. Has he won two? Did he win two back to back? I think it was two, wasn't it? Trying to go
How
for
many
his
years
third.
we've been doing this? Give me like six time back to back to back to
No,
back to back
I
to back
don't, Ben. I think in the
winners.
very beginning we didn't let other people
No,
play.
it was just me and you, and we were rubbish every week.
And
Just
then,
you two.
Marcel's mum and his cousin are in fifth with 160. Natasha Drew, I think she's there's something to do with you, isn't she, Ben? In sixth, and then Gareth Harvey, who does the maths for the podcast, is in seventh. So,
Price.
surprise, surprise. He did say, Marcel, who was it? Was asking for bonus
Me.
points, Ben.
Yeah,
He did
Ben.
say that he's open to bribes. And he
Excellent.
wants posters of high-profile athletes, and they're worth 50 points a signed poster. So, if
Ski racing athletes or any athletes?
no, ski racing athletes. He was
Okay.
very specific.
I'm sure I can find that old Langer's calendar if that counts with Julia Mancuso and some
Yeah,
other people in it.
you could fake her auto signature. No worries. I reckon you got that in the locker anyway.
You know, that's the exact poster I was thinking of when you said posters of ski racing athletes. Ben, great minds.
Right, I think before somebody gets us cancelled, we'll stop talking about posters. Marcel leads the way on our side of things, annoyingly, and then Ben, and then Ed. Anyway, on to this.
Wait, what? Who was third?
Yeah, third on the podium is me. So yeah. Anyway. Back to the less important stuff, but maybe more important to those of you that are still here listening. The men were over in Aspen for the final set of races over in North America, and the two giant slalom days were proper good, wintry, solid, really cool snow conditions. Marco Odermatt was exceptional on day one. Luke Meyer, 1/14 of a second behind in second. Atli McGrath went from seventh to second. Tumler, yet another fourth for him. Diali Prandini, where on earth has he managed to find that form? Alex Venazza barely could turn a giant slalom ski at the start of this season. Was starting in the blooming 50s, I think he was, and is in sixth. And Stine Olsen went from second to seventh. Mark, let's start with you, mate. There's so much to talk about with these couple of giant slalom races. You got Stine Olsen, and he did it on the second day again. We'll sort of cut.
Bottle merchant.
Well, let me give you the rundown
Whoa.
of the second giant slalom as well, and then we'll talk about it as a whole. I think it's probably easier
Okay.
to so we're not having to cross refer. Odermatt on the second day, with an absolutely monstrous second run charge, went from third to first, throwing it all on the line. He had absolutely no right to even be in the finish area, let alone on the top step. To make it 9 from 9. Meyer still in second, 0.34 back. Haugen, his first ever World Cup giant slalom podium, went from fifth to third. Diali Prandini, very close to a podium. Alex Venazza went with a massive second run as well from him, getting better and better at GS. And actually, that's his best World Cup result all season, irrespective of slalom or giant slalom. And Stine Olsen went from the lead to 17th. Mark, talk about something to do with those two results. Where would you like to start?
Marco Odermatt's quite good, isn't
Nah, he's overrated. I've never, you know,
he?
lucky. He's lucky, he is.
The thing, so talking about him over time is getting more and more predictable, but I think the thing that was interesting over these two races is I don't know if it was the second, maybe second run on the second race, where he had quite a big mistake, I think, coming out of a left footer towards the end. And that guy seems, it's almost like he's got an internal clock, someone saying, yeah, you're 2 tenths behind, mate. And he's just like, boom, boom, boom. Okay, cool, got that back. And it seems to be within two or three gates. He just gets it back and then goes again. So that to me is, I don't know, that's just a true racer, isn't it? He's just unbelievable on all fronts, it seems. And Marcel, you're going to say something.
I always suspected that with Hirscher as well. Some little something in his ears, like, "Hey, quicker, bit quicker." I think that would.
Do you remember in Schwimming when people were speculating that the sort of light over the last beam, that sort of I don't know what you call it, the boom over the piece there, that it was coming up red if he was behind, and so
Yeah,
he
but they
knew.
stopped doing it, didn't they? Because of that, they stopped putting the color on it.
But I genuinely,
I said that, and
I
then they
would
started
love.
throwing snowballs at his nearest
Yeah,
competitor and hoped that would
exactly.
work.
I'd love to try that, or someone to try it and see if it makes a difference. Because I genuinely think he would. Can you imagine if you like?
You say that, but I don't know if it would. Like Mark said, he just made a massive mistake. Like I could have a coach at
No,
Mayo
but
saying, "You've
think
just dropped
about it.
half a second. I can't get it back."
No, but no,
Like
but think
you have
about
to
it.
be good enough to get the speed back again.
But the problem is if you make a mistake, or if you know, some people, and I was one of them, always started off probably well, and then came into this weird thing that you just ski down but not really push it. But if someone, I guess if you get into that stage and someone tells into your ear, mate, this is pretty crap, like start pushing again.
Just
I
stop
think
now.
that, I think that actually that would definitely do something to you, and I'm 100% sure that that could help.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you kind of if you ski a dual parallel, then
Know exactly where you are.
you have the visual, and so it's the audio equivalent, isn't it? Of you're behind, get on with it. And people talk about, well, it's split second decisions and stuff, but it's kind of split second decisions in F1 as well. And I don't know, not least, it would make for some interesting audio for us to listen to. I guess other things in the races there from my side, or looking at the results, I think William Hansen was in the points for the first time, which is pretty cool to see. I think Radamus was probably just trying to push too hard and trying to destroy everything, and ended up having a little bit of an off time. But the Norwegians, for McGrath to be back on the podium, I think he was saying that's nearly, is it nearly 3 years since he's been on a GS podium? Could that be right?
1,000 days or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's been a while. And Timon Haugen is having a brilliant run of form. He's just consistently chipping away at top sevens. So I think that's been interesting. And then, Stine Olsen put it on his own social media, said that these second runs aren't too fun at the moment. I guess, these things come and go. He's really young, and once something's happened two or three times, you do start thinking to yourself, oh, am I cursed on these second runs? And it becomes a thing in your head. So probably once he breaks that randomly, then we won't see much more of it. But
I think we saw that. Yeah. Sorry to cut you there. Yeah, I think you're right. I think we talked about it at length, didn't we, with Lena Dürr, when she was winning first runs and then failing to convert and failing to convert and failing to convert. And actually, when she did win, it would think it was from fourth or fifth. And I wonder whether, that is going to almost not need to be the way, because he obviously doesn't need that because he's good enough and he could do it. But that may be where that sort of confidence will come from, when he's fourth or fifth, 2 tenths or 2, 3 tenths away, with nothing to lose and everything to gain. Whereas obviously, I think at the moment, when you're young and relatively inexperienced, I mean, he's not inexperienced, obviously, but relatively, it just you've got something to try and protect, and you can see that from Odomat. And obviously, Odomat's different league to pretty much everybody at the moment, that he doesn't ski trying to protect at all. Whereas I think both of those second runs, you saw Stine Olsen very different to the way that he attacked the first run. So what do you think, Ben, in terms of Stine Olsen's attack and what's going on there?
I think you're right, Ed. It might be one of those things where it'll be easier for him to win a race from a second run charge, because there's something in your mind when you're in the start gate on the second run and you know you've got to beat a bunch of people who haven't gone down yet. It's so much easier to push that bit harder. It's almost like before you've even started the second run, you've got that visual representation of the dual slalom Mark was talking about, of that these people are already in front of me, I've got to catch them. It's already in your head. Whereas when you're first, it's something I have zero experience of. There is a different mindset. You like you're in your head, you're trying to say it's not a big deal, just do what you did on the first run. But on the first run, no one's ahead of you, and you're just trying to put down the fastest run. And it's a very hard thing to put yourself in that mind space, no matter what you do. It's a bit like we were talking last week with words with River Adamus saying, I'm not nervous, or there's no pressure, when clearly he was massively nervous and under huge amounts of pressure. Like, you say the things to tell yourself, it's just like the first run, but it's not. And you need to be able to believe it to ski properly. And he's just in a position at the moment where he's overthinking those second runs. And we've talked about people who've done awesome second run charges a bunch of times. So perhaps if he finds himself in that situation, it's a bit easier to then do it. But like you said, he's talented enough, and you can see the raw speed is there. Like, he'll win a bunch of races, no doubt. But for now, it just seems that if he's leading after the first run, it seems to be he's got something in his head, and maybe just, come back next season when there's less of a "you keep messing up second runs," or have a chat with
Oh no.
McGrath about whatever his second runs have been doing recently, because he keep putting in rubbish first runs and epic second runs.
Yeah.
I don't know. I actually think leading a race is pretty good usually. I
Oh,
think
I
it's.
mean, I would
I
anticipate that would be the case. I
don't
mean,
know. Yeah, like I said, I have no experience in this myself. I just presume it's harder.
I mean, I never led a World Cup race, obviously, but I feel like you
I
should
just
be.
think
You should.
you've got to protect when you've got something that you're leading. So I feel like surely that's added pressure, no?
Yeah, but it's not really. I feel like it should actually just do the opposite. I remember when I was not, obviously not World Cup, but European Cups and stuff, I always thought that was the best thing,
Did you?
Yeah, I
Interesting.
love
I guess the
it.
way of thinking of it is that you turn it on its head, don't you? You're like, well, I'm the best guy here, so bring it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, if you lead a World Cup race, you're like, well, why are they even starting? Like, they're not having a chance against me anyway. I mean, it's a done deal, basically.
Could you honestly have that
I
thought
think
in your head with Marco Aid about warming up behind you? Could you have
yeah,
that thought?
watching
I'd
over
be
you,
like,
smashed out of the
he's
gate.
not
Dude,
warming up behind you. He's not warming up behind you. He's gone. You're
yeah,
like,
exactly. So you've just
oh,
seen him go. You've just seen
it's
him.
even worse. You've just watched him push out the start gate. Go, do I look that quick when I ski down? Jesus, he's
Don't watch
rapid.
him. No. You don't do that. You don't watch people before you. Like, that's a stupid idea. Because they look, you think like, oh my God, this guy was
All they
really.
do is look at
I
people on the
actually
TV.
did
We've
that a
been
couple
saying
of
it's a
times.
bad idea, Marcel.
No,
We've
I
been
actually
saying this for
stopped doing
months.
that on purpose, because I thought that was actually really irritating me. Like, when I watch people, like, you could, let's say you are, I don't know, my best was maybe like six or seven in the first run, but then you watch the first couple of guys, and then you see what the difficulties of the track is or are, and then you don't. I never watched anyone anymore. I feel like if you watch those guys, and specifically watching them on TV, is even worse, because they look way way better on TV than they do in real life. Like, I'm not even joking. When you look at real life, you're like, well, okay, that's good. But on TV, if someone's really good on TV, like, if someone's really good, they look so much better on TV, and you're like,
Man, I look crap on TV. So how crap must I have been when I was in real life?
seriously,
Oh, I
because
was gonna make the same
you
joke.
know, like, when you have like when you watch someone on TV, and then you watch someone on like an actual coach's video camera,
Yeah.
there is such a huge difference. It
Yeah,
looks
because
completely
TV's
different.
glitz, TV's glitz and glamour, and then on a coach's camera, that's what you see every day, and it's just another ski racer going every day. So I think that is a valid point, but I can't see that Stine Olsen is standing in the start gate going, I'm better than everybody else, and use.
But maybe he should, because he
Well,
actually is.
yeah, Marcel's. I get what Marcel's saying. He kind of should be. If he's won the first round or in second, he should be standing there saying, I know I can beat these guys.
It's not the first time he's leading, it's like he
No.
led
And
a
it's not
couple
the
of years.
first time he's won or he's won
Yeah,
before.
but it's like, okay, well, fine. Like, because Audemars was, they took him all the way to the edge this time. Like, in the last three races, Christophersen and then two times Maillard. He is beatable at the moment. Like, he makes lots of mistakes. He's still winning, but those they can beat him. I'm pretty sure they can.
Yeah,
You say he's
you're
beatable,
definitely
but
right.
no one can beat him. They're
Yeah, but like, it's and that's
tripping over themselves trying to beat
well,
him,
that's
but
the
they can't
thing of
get
like
there. When someone has an unbeatable run, like Hirscher, like, people getting so afraid of them, they're like, I can never beat this guy. Like, it's in their bloody head that they can never beat this guy. And he's standing at the start no matter where. He's like, well, I don't think they're gonna beat me anyway. And he thinks they're never gonna beat me, so he's up here. And the guys who would be very close to him would be like, oh shit, I can never beat this guy. He's leading again, or he's in charging again, and they go a bit further down. And that's when you see like that delta of
Yeah.
what is better and the rest is not as good.
Yeah, what we're talking about is Stine Olsen. So it will take a couple of those ones where he converts and gets that win, and then he will start to believe it, and other people will believe that he's that good. And it's just well, you just have to cross that line. Like we, you know, he's think how young he is in comparison to Sendy Wendy, and how long she had seconds and thirds and seconds and thirds and couldn't cross the line until she did. And then everyone was like, "Yeah, she did it." And now, until she got injured, but and then it was like, okay, but now she can win races rather than, oh, we think she's going to get a podium every week.
I think the thing also with Odomat is obviously always going to think that he has got it in his locker because undeniably has. Marcel and I were when whilst we were waiting between runs with Eurosport, we were talking about the run that Odomat has been on. And in 2022, in the 2022 season, he was on the podium 8 out of 8, and he won 5 out of 8. He was only beaten by two athletes in 2022, and that was Kristoffersen and Brennsteiner. In 2023, he had 7 out of 10 wins. He was on the podium 9 out of 10 times, and the only time he wasn't on the podium was the race he didn't start because he picked up that injury. And he was only beaten by three athletes in 2023: Bratton, Schwarz, and Kristoffersen. Obviously, 2024, he's won everything. So since 2022 winter, he's only been beaten by Kristoffersen, Bratton, Schwarz, and Brennsteiner. Those are the only people that have got to the finish line over two runs ahead of him,
Yeah, Brett.
which is absolutely mad. In 2021, when it was his first sort of real season on the World Cup, he won two and was podium in 6 out of 10. He was beaten by a bunch of people then. But you've got to go back to 2021 to sort of have a real sort of a target or an achi or a perce a perceived achievable target of beating him.
Well, then you have like Schwarz is injured and Brennsteiner is all over the place, and Kristoffers is not really on top either. So it's like,
I was going to say, you could play spot the odd one out in that list of people, and Brennsteiner would be straight on the top.
So do you think that's
But
mad? Don't you think that's mad?
yeah, that's incredible how few people have actually beaten him in a GS race. I think obviously we talked forever about Odermatt now, but you have to say the skiing Mayol put in this weekend was out of this world.
Yes.
In both GSs and the slalom, like I've been saying probably since the first year of this podcast that I absolutely love his skiing and swoon about how technically amazing he is. We've had issues with how hard he pushes and can he be more aggressive and maintain that, you know, precision that he has. This weekend, I felt so sorry for him. I mean, Odermatt was out of this world, and I was almost laughing watching his second run of the second GS. But Mayo did absolutely everything he possibly could. He put down four incredible runs in GS, and it still wasn't enough. But you know, you could almost see in Odermatt's face, he almost felt embarrassed to have beaten him on both days with the mistakes he's put in his skiing that he hasn't put in previously.
Also, he is unbelievably like consistent now. And Marcel, the only thing that we were talking about, wasn't it, was like Ben said, that intensity and the ability to, you know, turn the tempo on and almost to have that internal clock. You know, the stuff we talked about with some of the best, where they feel how fast or how slow they're going and have to make adaptations. Where I think at Mayar throughout this season really hasn't had that, but he had four really good runs in these two GSs, and you know, pick and it's been a long time coming, because but all credit to him, because he's had to work really, really, really hard, because I think the start of the season wasn't great from
No,
his
he's one
height
of those people
standards.
we talked about at the start of the season. He might be a contender for the overall in terms of if something happened to Odermatt, probably. But in terms of he can compete across three disciplines, he can get a podium in Super G, and he's good at slalom and GS. So if he finds a consistency in the tech disciplines and throws in a solid year of Super G, he could be great. But it did the start of the season by his standards was really not up to scratch, and he was struggling for form. But towards the back end of the season, he has really picked up across certainly slalom and GS, and it's great to watch because it's you know I love his skiing. It's just like watching him.
I genuinely think he's the best skier. I genuinely do think he's the
Don't you
best.
start trying to get on my corner of thinking
No,
the
I
Mayall's the
obviously
greatest skier of all time. Get out of here, Marcel. Pick your own
I obviously
skier. Get out of
want to
it.
be well. He's like he is the best skier, like
Pick an
technically.
Austrian. Don't be picking Swiss people. There you are, playing up to the Swiss crowd again. Oh, the Swiss have got the best fans, or they got the best skiers. You're Austrian. Be Austrian, Marcel. Damn it.
But he said it in an interview. He's like, they asked him why he wasn't good on in the beginning of the season. He's like, well, I was like, I was skiing really well, like everything went well, and then a couple of races, all of a sudden he was like, lost my confidence over one or two races. And then he said it took him like 10 races to get back on his confidence level. And that's a real shame, because I think theoretically he could be the one who could be closest to Odermatt with being good in Super G, giant slalom, and slalom.
Yeah, we actually talked about him, I think, two or maybe three seasons ago, going, watch out for him because he is skiing three disciplines and could do well in three disciplines and going for the top for an overall. But this season, it seems to have been almost all or bust. He's either in the top five or he's high 20s, and he just does, and he hasn't had that consistency. I really hope that is the start of something, and it's certainly. I mean, yes, it's only a few races, but he looks really good, and it definitely looks like he's found that confidence. Just quickly on the GSs, I know that we've talked quite a lot about this. The Italians, I've got to talk about Dielli Prandini and Vinazza. In the first day, the two of them, it was a bit of a shock. Well, no, I think it was a shock. I was surprised anyway at how quick the two of them were in terms of how high up the list and the barely anything to separate them. I love the little banter in the finish area between the two of them, obviously sort of with the hand signals indicating that one of them owed the other one a drink. By the looks of it, they had like a beer on that second run to see who was going to finish ahead of each other. And that great bit of confidence or camaraderie or whatever it is, because I think Dielli Prandini's been nowhere this year, and Vinazza started nowhere this year in this discipline, and then all of a sudden the two of them. Della Vita is finding it difficult to find to be consistent, but those two have just, I don't know, skiing with a smile on the face again. Maybe nothing. Vinazza's got nothing to lose because at the start of the season he was a slalom skier, and Dielli Prandini's got nothing to lose because the start of the season was so crap.
That's the way to do it. Set the expectations really low so you can peak later on in the season. But they were brilliant. And Ali Prandini's been, it feels like he's been struggling for ages now, but for form. Like he had obviously the World Champs, he did really well, but even before that, he wasn't really skiing like himself for a while. And he's one of those guys that's just got so much potential. I guess he's not really a guy with young potential because he's way older. They still think of him as quite a young racer, but. He's not anymore, and he's brilliant. And the progression of Vinazza into a GS skier is really fun. To be honest with you, it'll be interesting. He's got the size in his body. It wouldn't surprise me if he turned into like Schwartz and started doing speed in a couple of years, because a bit like Mark was saying earlier, the only time you'd ever see Schwartz put on speed skis was for an Alpine combined. And he started off as a pure slalom racer, and then it was a surprise when he got podiums in GS, and Vinazza looks to be following a similar track, but he's got a much bigger frame, so he could carry a lot more of that kind of speed skier bulk and muscle as well if he wanted to. I mean, I have no idea if he can glide, but like it was so great to watch him. And like you said, the camaraderie was brilliant. And seeing as Marcel won't talk about the Austrians, I'm going to talk about one as well. How about Lukas Verstein's weekend? Like both days in the 50s, both days top 20 in the GS. That was brilliant. Or in the 20s of the GS. Like he looks like a real talent. Seriously, Marcel, do you know much about him and his skiing and stuff? Because like both those week runs, I was just like, wow, that is effort to put that in both days from the 50s into the making the flip.
I really like his skiing. He's very good. He was sixth in a Super G last year, and he's had a put up a couple of good Super G results, but then he hurt himself in Cortina, where he was on a way to at least the top five. So he's hugely talented, and he is a young guy. He is a young guy. I think how I don't know how old he is, maybe like 20, 21, 22, something like that. So he's definitely one to watch for the Austrians. And I'm glad they have a couple of guys now
And
in
what about
this.
Sturm? What about him? I mean, he failed to
Yeah,
finish.
he's great as well. He just gotta finish it.
Because he went, didn't he? Wasn't he into like 15th and 17th? Or he was in two top 20s in both first runs.
In Tahoe.
Yeah, in Tahoe, wasn't he? And then he was going quite well in Aspen. And so, yeah, he's obviously another one that's got some talent. We talked about how difficult the Austrians have found it to replace. Oh, you're always going to talk about Hirscher and replacing Hirscher or the likes. But in terms of, finding the next superstar, and we've sort of been not really sure where the next young superstar is coming. Schwarz has become a superstar because of how well he's doing, but he's not a young, he's not one of the youngsters coming through to rip up for the next 10, 50, 10 years. But yeah, I thought it was pretty cool to see those two as well.
Yeah, really.
Anything to add on GS? Bearing in mind, I'm conscious that we've been chit-chatting for ages, but I don't know. It just feels like there's so much to talk about. And then the last day of competition was the slalom, and it was very, very snowy. Lots and lots of snow. All hats off to the organizing committee and all the volunteers that worked tirelessly to get that race together. I don't know if any of those guys listen into the pod, but yeah. Very much appreciated from ski racing fans all over the globe, I think, to be able to get that race away. Loic May, our first ever World Cup slalom victory, and he looked really, really good. The confidence off the couple of days that he'd had in giant slalom just looked like he was metronomic again, just beautifully stood on the middle of his skis. Great balance. Strasser keeps the pressure up on Feller for the slalom title. Good for him. Kristoffersen, again, I think I said it in commentary, and we often talk about with football, with proper football, not American football, real football. And little dig.
Soccer ball.
Soccer. And how when your team or your person or whatever, or you're not doing very well, to still grind out a result, when you're not go when everything's not going well for you, I think it's really impressive. And I think that's quite a big statement from Kristoffersen. He isn't enjoying himself, really at the moment, and you can see that with the way he comes through the finish line. We know that he's not in tune with his equipment at the moment, but somehow still muscling his way down, and grit and determination is pushing him all the way onto podiums, whether it was the GS a couple of weeks ago where he very nearly got the better of Odemar, which obviously nobody's done this year, or then on the podium here. I thought it was really cool. Strolz, great to see him back very close to a podium. I'm so pleased, because I think he has had probably one of the toughest over the last couple of toughest times over the last couple of seasons, from the highs of that Olympic year. And then couldn't find a finish for love nor money. And then to go outside the top group and feel himself plummeting down the order. And then all of a sudden, still in the mix. Great for him. Fella, worst position all season long, is fifth. Mr. Consistency. Haugen in sixth. Riding in seventh with a really good two runs. And then hats off to Laurie Taylor. Unbelievable skiing. Quickest on the second run. He absolutely put every single thing on the line that he possibly could. And it's probably, and I know that a little bit biased over here from the Brits, but probably one of the gutsiest second runs I can remember seeing. Hats off to him. Good for him. Ben, do you want to go for that one, Ben?
So yeah, I'm also got to commentate on it. Don't give him first dick goes at this. Yeah, well, no, yeah, greatest ski run of all time. I'd start with that. No, it was incredible. Laurie's second run, I was shouting at the telly, telling him not to do everything he was doing because he looked like he was going to go down every third turn. And we've seen a few second runs from him and Billy this year where they've been flying, but it's just been like, don't risk too much, just especially because they're starting so far back. Just get some points, get into that mix, like get your footing. And he just said, "No, I'm going all out." And I think just what was incredible, we talk about with Odemar in that the ability to recover quickly. He was making mistakes every third turn, but he was recovering immediately after every mistake. So there was no kind of two, three gates to recover, which sometimes when you see someone get right in the back seat, it takes them two, three gates to get back in the right position and accelerate again. As soon as he made a mistake, he was accelerating out of it, which not many people can do. And it's we talked about it for years with Laurie that he has some really impressive speed when he gets it right. And I don't know what it was about the courses, the snow, just his mindset. It worked. It was working. The being able to come in from, like, to going into 19th from 49 on the first run was really, really good skiing, because a lot of people were struggling on that slalom day. The conditions were nowhere near as nice as they were for the GS. It looked a lot softer. It looked a lot more cut up. And he skied so smoothly on the first run that you just thought, okay, just do that again on the second run. And he said, no, I've got a solid bib number. I'm going all out.
Going, yeah.
And he went, it was incredible. I was absolutely gutted. I can't remember who it was who came after. Was it Haugen who came down after
Three
him and
honeys or
beat
something.
him? And then he had like probably one of the greatest runs he's ever had in his life, and didn't even get time to sit in the chair to beat
Yeah,
the
that's a
leader.
good
And
point.
then Haugen sat there for the next 10 people while other people were bailing and dropping loads of time. And that's, but in my mind, I was like, that should have been Laurie's time, sitting there in that winner's chair, just by a couple hundredths different. It was such a shame for him. But yeah, incredible skiing. I'm really happy for him, and hopefully he can take those feelings and keep like producing that, because I think probably since we started the podcast, we've been saying he's got the speed, we want to see more from him. And now it's just, please do that two, three times
Just
and get in that top 30 seed.
quickly before Marcel takes over that, and also that what that does do for Billy is sort of sets his points up for next year, so that he has now got a really good bib for next year's World Cup for the whole season. So, you know, what that result does actually do is takes, you know, it takes the pressure off. Yes, you're not going to get in World Cup fight. You've got you know, Kranjska Gora this coming weekend. Nothing, absolutely nothing to lose. And you're not scrabbling around trying to look for points so that he doesn't start 49, 50 again. He's going to be starting 31, 32, 33, 34, you know, low 30s. Even, you know, let's get going. Marcel, go on then,
I mean,
mate.
there wasn't there was there's not that much to add, actually. I mean, that was an incredible run. Ben, you weren't the only one screaming at the TV. We were too. F-ing hell, sorry. That was pretty epic, actually. Pretty epic. Well done to him. Well done to his team, actually, because they are, grafting along a lot, and I think that was well deserved. The rest, Strolz, happy for him as well. I think for him that was so important too, and he was skiing great. What he does is, like, he's so good at the bottom usually. Like, he's just picking up the speed.
Oh, he was rapid at the bottom
Yeah,
section this the yeah, and that's like, he was so fast.
he's very strong. Like, he's, in pretty good shape, and I know him really well. He's in great shape, and I feel like that's the thing with Audemars as well. Like, they always gain time at the bottom. Maybe not him so much than Audemars, obviously, this year. But that was pretty impressive. And I think it was actually a great slalom. The first run was more difficult than I think Tristan thought it would be.
Yes. Yeah, I suppose
Marcel,
Tristan.
if you know Strokes really well, do you want him to get him on the podcast? Or
Maybe I can ask him.
how good is his English?
Am I not enough for you anymore?
Yeah, Tristan set that first run. I called him up just before the first run to ask him, what he was thinking, how he was thinking the boys were going to do. And he was like, yeah, well, the first run, it might be a bit boring, not set anything too tricky. It's a race to try and allow for later start. And as he said he set a course that he hoped, and the design was to give later starters an opportunity, because he said that Laurie is skiing so well at the moment, and I need to try and work out, give him an opportunity for him from a high bib to put his skiing on the table. This is exactly what happened.
Almost like he meant it. Again, so I think that's like revisionist history. I know he said it beforehand, but I feel like that's coaches just being like, yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Retrospective coaching, apart from he
But
said it before it happened.
weirdly, the difficult courses, Zubcic, Croatian on a difficult course, 30th after the first round. What's he playing at? I thought when the Brits set, it was Croatian City, and that was going to be him and
Think the snow just wasn't quite hard enough, was it? And I think with
him and Rodez,
Zubcic.
I was expecting big time efforts from both
Yeah,
of
but I
them.
think Zubcic needs bulletproof snow. He's a bit like Hiroshilov used to be. You know, if it's not bulletproof icy, you knew that Hiroshilov was never going to get close. And I think you could almost say that with Zubcic as well, Marcel, don't you think? Because of the way that he skis, that really short pressure, like they're banging all of that stretch, because he's a brute, he's properly powerful. And for him to be able to use that power, he's got to have a platform, he's got to have something to press against. And I think unless it's like that, you're just not going to see it from him.
I actually think he just had a pretty bad weekend in general. I don't think he, you know, he was maybe in the first giant slalom. I think he was, what was he, fifth or something?
He wasn't on the podium where he was supposed to be because I picked him.
He wasn't anywhere. It wasn't
rubbish.
Seven.
I think he just had a shocking win. Like, you know, for his standard, it's pretty shocking. So I don't know. I feel like in slalom, it's a bit of his hit and miss with him. Like sometimes he's very good. He doesn't have that consistency in slalom that he's probably had like a couple of years back.
Yeah.
I guess the big question coming out the weekend though is, Marcel, what's the word on Manny Fella's back? Because
I think he's fine.
He looked in quite a bit of pain when he skied out of the GS, but with a lot of professional athletes, you can never quite tell whether they're just embarrassed, so pretending to be hurt, or are actually really hurt. It's very hard to tell. Like, it's like, seriously, the way they stop. You're like, oh no, it could be really bad. Or they could just be like, oh, I've just had an absolute mare. I better pretend like I'm really hurt so I don't get too much abuse. I thought in the slalom, he looked like he was skiing in a lot of pain, but it might just be my brain projecting onto him.
I think he's fine. I didn't hear anything. And even if he would be in pain, I don't think he would, you know, they would just give him probably like an injection or something just to get over. I mean, realistically, if he does well on this race, you know, the next slalom, he's done anyway.
Well, he's 169 points clear of Strasser with two slaloms left to go. So he is near enough done and dusted, isn't he? So very quickly, because again, we're going on long. Clément Noël, DNF. After
you could just see it coming.
The second most consistent man on tour, Ed, yeah?
I said it to Ed on commentary. I was like, he asked me who is going to win. I said, you know, Loïc Méard is way more consistent, and he is struggling in those conditions. Noël, he really is.
Yeah,
he was struggling on the first run even a bit, but then in the second run, he just couldn't find that rhythm. It's just when it's like
he's so on the edge of balance, isn't he?
Yeah, when it gets tough out there, he's really on the edge with his balance. He's obviously, you know, incredibly quick, probably quicker than anyone else, but he, I don't know, just can't really find that.
Yeah, if he can put a run down, I think he's the fastest slalom skier on the tour. When the conditions are right and he's confident and those kind of things. But just this year, I think hasn't really helped him because the conditions have fluctuated so much, and it's so hard to have that when you ski on that kind of such precise level that he does, that you're gonna, if it's not perfect, you're taking risks that you probably shouldn't, and it's just, you can, like, and it takes such a tight line. Every fourth, fifth gate, you're like, oh, that was really close to a straddle. Yeah. Oh, that was really close to a straddle. I think Eurosport showed on the first run when he was rapid, they showed a slow-mo or close-up of one of his gates, and just the ski bouncing, his inside ski bouncing was what stopped it straddling. Like it bounced into the right. It looked like he was about to straddle, and then his ski just hopped inside, and it definitely wasn't him moving the ski. That was the snow moving his ski as he got close to the front of the gate. So when you're taking that tight a line, you really are playing with such fine margins.
Yeah,
you can't.
Very fair.
You can't legislate for it, but also he needs to work out a way that for some point in the future he's got to find a way to get down eight or nine slaloms in a season in the top five if he wants to win that globe again.
Right, let's get on to the picks, shall we? The women are racing over in RA, they're racing GS on Saturday, slalom on Sunday. The men were supposed to be racing GS and slalom, but the conditions over in Kranjska Gora are not great. So they've already cancelled the giant slalom and have moved the men's slalom from Sunday to Saturday. So it's just men's slalom this weekend, but the women are in action, GS and slalom. Right, we are going to do some picks. Ben, you can pick first for the women's giant slalom.
Federica Brignone.
Federica Brignone. Marcel Mathis.
I go for Laura Good.
You're going to go for Goot. Then I am going to go for Sarah Hector on Home Snow.
Nice one.
On the women's slalom, I'm going to go first, and I'm going to say Sven Larsson.
Oh no, I wanted to go first.
Tough.
Damn it.
Tough, mate.
Who else? Who else is there?
Marcel, would you like to go second?
No, actually,
Okay, Ben.
I don't. Do you know Schifrin's race in this slalom?
She's the rumors are she is racing.
See, I can't pick on rumors. This is very
Are
annoying, Michaela. If you could
they
just say
rumors or
do.
are these rumors? Huh?
What
Rumors
did
or rumors?
you... I'm gonna get. I'll go with Ed's pick of Dua then instead.
Okay, then, Marcel, now you do have to pick.
So I do have to pick. I go for Sarah Hector. Why not?
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then the men are racing now just one race. And obviously, that is slalom. Marcel, you haven't picked first yet. So you can pick first now.
For the men's slalom, I go for Loïc Méard.
Ben, have you gone? Yeah, you can go second again. It's fine. Go on.
The comeback, Clément Noël.
No.
And that's risky. It's risky business.
I'm gonna say Norway.
Any particular Norway or just all of Norway?
I kind of feel like I'd really like it to be Christofferson, but I just can't, because Christofferson will have taken the good stuff from his setup and just thrown it out of the window and trying to look for something else because it wasn't quite quick enough. So I'm gonna go Haugen.
That is exactly what we said would happen last week with his GS after the second. We said he
That's
was
exactly what
1200ths
he
off
did.
Odermatt, so he's going to throw away that setup and try and find 1200ths rather than stick with this is the best GS I've skied all season. And what happened?
Exactly.
I've no idea if he actually changed setup, but it just happened that he was way
I
slower.
think, for the sake of the story, I think it makes sense. Yeah, that's exactly what
For
happened.
creative purposes only.
Marcel, you look like you're deep in thought there, my friend.
No.
That's just your face. Well, one, obviously the three of us are on the pod. Unfortunately, Mark had to duck out earlier on. Mark's actually got some real work to do and fighting some fires back at base. So he had to duck off. He sends his apologies and he said thank you very much. He said that I was very, very good and you two were very average on this podcast.
Different
But
to any
one thing,
podcast.
our go-to pick for anybody absent from the pod. Charlie Raposo is injured and he's done his knee, so any absentees won't be able to pick Raposo anymore.
Who's a suitable equivalent?
I feel like we might get yourself in trouble answering that one.
Then.
I know, it's a shame. He got injured on the first day. Real shame, obviously, and we wish him well with his recovery, but ACLs are tough injuries to come back from. Plenty do. Let's hope that he does and comes back stronger than before. He has surgery this weekend, I think he said. Saturday, I think it is. So wish him luck and wish him well for that one. Anything else, gents, to add?
No,
No.
nope.
Right, until next time. Bye for now.